My guest today is Mark Kuckelberg. Mark is a philosopher of technology. He is a professor of philosophy of media and technology at the Department of Philosophy of the University of Vienna and president of the Society for Philosophy and Technology. He also has an affiliation as professor of technology and social responsibility at the Center for Computing and Social Responsibility in De Montfort University in the UK. He is the author of a number of books, including Liberation and Passion, The Metaphysics of Autonomy, Imagination and Principles, Growing Moral Relations, Human Being at Risk, Environmental Skill, Money Machines, and most recently, just published this year, New Romantic Cyborgs. He's also the author of numerous articles in the area of technology and ethics. So I'd like just like to welcome you to the show, Mark.
Thanks. Good afternoon.
So Mark, you have a diverse set of interests, but I invited you on the show to discuss some issues in the philosophy of human-robot relations. Now, I'm primarily interested in robots as governance tools, as ways of implementing policies and procedures in different environments, and also as tools for nudging or controlling or influencing human behavior. Now, fortunately, this interest is fairly broad and encompasses many of the issues, I think, raised in the literature on human-robot interactions. And I want to use this interview to discuss the ideas contained in two of your papers. First is Artificial Agents, Good Care, and Modernity. And the second is a paper called The Tragedy of the Master, Automation, Vulnerability, and Distance. More specifically, I want to discuss two propositions contained in these papers. The first proposition is the claim that the use of robots in certain workplaces is part of the process of modernization, or is an expression of modernity. And the second proposition is that the use of automation technologies threatens to make us vulnerable, alienated, and automated masters. I want to look at some of the arguments in favor of both of these propositions and some of the fallout from them if they happen to be true. And I'll try and build up to this gradually, exploring some of the key concepts and ideas for the benefits of the listeners along the way. So I'll just start with some stage-setting questions. First, what is a robot?
Well, that's a very good question. It's often not defined. For me, it's an information technology that's embodied, so that it has some kind of human form, animal form, which means that it's not just a computer or a phone, but has a shape that we generally recognize to interact with. But that still is a very general definition, and there are gray areas, like bots on the internet, for example, are not embodied. Still, they're interesting to look at. I generally open up the discussion to all kind of ICTs that are automated.
So, people talk about AI and artificial intelligence. You would see that as very much part of the conversation about robots.
I think it should be, because it's a matter of degree, basically. We have already smart devices and artificially intelligent agents. It's a matter of degree, I think, the degree of agency they have and the kind of embodiment they have. So I think it's good to keep the discussion broad enough.
Yeah, so a lot of people have the stereotypical image of a robot being like a humanoid object, but would a self-driving car, would that be classified as a robot in your worldview?
I definitely think it's a robot. It has some agency, it is embodied. So it's as much a robot as a plane that flies on the autopilot. So I would include them in the definition.
Yeah, so you're part of a general group of scholars who work on something called robo-philosophy. And there's a lot of hype and fear associated with the rise of the robots at the moment, societal concerns around robots taking our jobs or even robots threatening human existence. So I'm just wondering, what are the philosophical and societal issues that you think are worth considering when it comes to robots?
Mm-hmm. Well, one philosophical issue is that robots make us think about what humans are, given that machines can do more and more things that humans can do as well. They make us think about what we are as humans. How are we different from robots? So that's one question. Another one is that raises problems with responsibility. If we're going to have machines that have more agency, that appear to be doing things that we do, then are we going to ascribe responsibility to them? Should we? And so these are another set of questions. There are also questions having to do with social robotics. If robots pretend to be social partners, kind of fellows we talk to, then you can ask ethical questions about whether that's a matter of deception, and if so, if that deception is should be allowed.
Yeah. So one thing that you advocate in the approach to robot ethics and the ethics of robot-human interactions is a phenomenological approach. And I think this will come up when we discuss some of the more specific arguments you have about care bots and modernity. So maybe you could just briefly say what this phenomenological approach consists in.
Classical phenomenology is a rather huge topic to talk about. What phenomenology for me means is that we're looking at the experience of the human rather than only the definition of robots, for example, in terms of machines or in terms of the scientific definitions that can be given of objects. What matters for me is our relation between subjects and objects. So our relation to the technology, how things like robots appear to us, what we experience when we interact with the technology. So this is very important to distinguish this kind of approach from only looking in scientific terms and in terms of in technical terms to technology.
Yeah, so instead of taking that objective, like third-party, all-seeing eye view of the scientist, you're looking at it from a subjective perspective, from the experiences of the person interacting with the robot.
That's right, and so scientific experience of robots can be one kind of experience, but it's not the only one.
Because you mentioned one thing earlier on in your definition of a robot, that they're embodied. But isn't there another aspect to what a robot is, that robots are also agents?
Yes, so by a robot, I mean an information technology that's not only embodied, but also that has agency. So it can do things by itself. It's not just a passive device. So with these two aspects, I think we already capture a lot of the meaning of robots.
Okay, so I think we have a clear enough sense of what a robot is. It's an embodied agent, ICT-based agent. And then we've also, I think, clarified this phenomenological approach to the understanding of robots. Let's move on to discuss some more concrete issues around robots and ethics in society, starting with care bots and modernity. So just the first question I would ask here is, what is a care bot and how prevalent are care bots at the moment?
Yeah, so a care bot is an abbreviation of care robots, and means robots that are used in healthcare. There are already robots used in healthcare, for example, some robots in an operation room, but that's not so much seen as a care bot because it's used by surgeons. So with robots in healthcare, I mainly mean robots that are used in more kind of nursery roles as nurses. So there are, for example, robots that you can cuddle, you can talk to, and they are there already. They are in some homes for elderly people. Yeah, and that raises then some questions.
Yeah, I know. Just at my own university, they were one of the pilot project places for something called the Mario robot, which was used to help with elderly people with early onset dementia. And I think there's a big drive towards the adoption of this technology in care for the elderly in particular. At least it seems that way from what I've been reading.
Yes, I mean, some people argue that there's a demographic issue that therefore we need robots. So basically, there are more elderly people and therefore they argue we need robots to take care of them because we won't have enough humans to do so.
Yeah, so we're all undergoing this kind of aging shift in our demographics, and so there's a care burden that will need to be shouldered by somebody in the future, and robots are being identified as a possible set of agents who could shoulder that burden. But there seems to be a lot of concern about this as well. So I looked at the recent EU Parliament report on robotics and civil liability. And one of the things that they mentioned in that report was that humans should be involved in the care role. So, I mean, what are the concerns here? So you, in your article, you take a step-by-step approach to this by starting out by identifying what good care is and then looking and analyzing the use of robots in light of that understanding of what good care is. So maybe we could start with that issue of what is a good caring relationship? What are the features of a good caring relationship?
I think that the, one of the features is definitely that good care involves a significant amount of human contact. We read into the issue of care some kind of notion of humanness already. We think that humans care for in the sense of taking care of practical things, but also care about at the same time. That if someone delivers care, that they also care about us, even if just to some extent. For example, in healthcare, we want a doctor that does not just mechanically diagnose us. We want them to, if we're in pain, for example, to care about that, to try to relieve the pain, because it's another human being. So humanness and human contact is part, I think, of care. One can discuss the extent to which it should be, but I think there's always going to be a little bit of humanness in the meaning of care itself. Also related to that, I think, is the presence of emotions. Again, maybe we don't want a highly emotional doctor or a highly emotional nurse to take care of us. But on the other hand, I think if we deal with human beings, we want some kind of emotional relation to them. And so these are concerns with regard to robots, because robots, they are not human, and they cannot have real emotions. At most, they can simulate emotions. So that raises the concern of, well, isn't that kind of a form of deception of people, giving them machines that pretend to care for them, not only deliver the technical care, so to speak, but also pretend to care about their problems. So I think good care, in any case, includes this. And then we can discuss if robots, machines can provide this.
Because I think there are two directions I want to go in relation to that argument that you outlined about the concerns about the use of robots in the care context. And the first direction is really to go into maybe a classic philosophical debate about robots. So the argument that you outlined there, as best I can understand, is focusing on the lack of subjectivity in robots, that they can't really emote, or they can't empathize with their patients or the object, or the people that they're caring for. So is that a concern in principle, or is it just a concern in fact? So do you think that in principle robots will never be able to have that subjectivity, or do you think it's just a matter of technical possibility at the moment, that there's no technical feasibility of this?
A good question. I personally think that it's a matter of principle, that robots cannot achieve self-consciousness and consciousness, and therefore can't ever have the capability to really care for us, care about us.
So, I mean, pursuing this could get us into a rabbit hole, but I'm just curious as to maybe just briefly, like, why do you think robots can't, in principle, ever achieve that subjectivity?
Yeah, it is a big discussion, but it all starts from the very different kind of embodiment robots have. We humans are these biological beings, I do think that the intelligence we have and the consciousness emerges from that particular form of embodiment and that particular kind of existence. And so machines do not have that. Therefore, they cannot become conscious. But this is not really something I assume it in my papers. It's not something that I occupy myself with, mainly with this particular question.
Yeah, I appreciate that. So you're kind of an advocate of an embodied approach to cognition and consciousness, and so robots lack the same kind of embodiment and biological nature as humans.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. So the other direction I wanted to go in was to focus on this issue of deception, mm-hmm. and the notion that if the robot is performing a role, it's performing emotions, it's giving a superficial set of behavioral cues that we normally associate with a certain emotional state. And there's lots of research going on at the moment about how robots can communicate through behavioral cues certain emotions, but they lack the subjective content to go along with that. So it's deceptive. But isn't there a problem here insofar as in many service contexts, I would argue that many humans are faking emotion.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And so that's interesting, because it makes us think critically about how we humans deal with one another. So we can question if that's a good thing, right? That we fake emotions in human context.
Sure, yeah, we can. That's it.
And also we can think about small children, for example. They use dolls, right? And we don't seem to find that problematic. So I mean, I'm willing. I have a nuanced position on this. I'm willing to accept that deception may be even part of human life, human social life. There's some degree of deception. On the other hand, I think there is a problem if people really believe that the robot they're talking to is an animal or is a human being, which in some cases can happen with very small children or with elderly people who have certain cognitive limitations. So then in these cases, I think it is problematic, and we need to think about how we perhaps can still have robots and machines as part of our social lives in general, but have them in a way that it makes clear to those who use them that in the end they are machines. So to avoid this kind of problems.
Do you think that it could be okay to use robots as long as I'm not under a mistaken assumption that they are subjectively aware of what's going on? So for example, if I use a Roomba robot, I'm not in any danger of thinking that that has some level of subjectivity or that it cares about me. You know, there's no worry about that. And maybe even some of the kinds of care bots that they have, a normal, cognitively healthy adult wouldn't believe that they are subjectively aware or that they have genuine emotions.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no deception in those cases. But in certain instances, there could be that deception because you genuinely believe or perceive the robot to have this subjective awareness. And I think that's where your phenomenological approach enters back into the argument.
Mm-hmm. Yes, because in the end, of course, the kind of experience and knowledge we have is based on appearance. And so there's a big gray area of experiences of technologies where we do at the same time know that the robot is just a machine, but at the same time also have this experience of something more than a machine. So we could try to solve the ethical problem by building machines that do not elicit the appearance of a human being or an animal or so. But the problem is that there is a huge gray area where at the same time we know that machine is just a machine, but we also at the same time have the feeling and the experience of something more than a machine. And so I'm interested in that. So I'm not so interested in the discussion about deception. I'm not so interested in immediately moralizing and saying like this or that kind of technology is wrong or bad. Rather, I want to better understand what is exactly happening in a case when we encounter robots. And so there the phenomenology comes back in, indeed, because I think the phenomenology as an epistemology teaches us that there is this kind of experience of the robot which is always mediated. And so even if we see it as a machine, that's also a particular kind of experience. And so I find it interesting that we have these variations, that we can see and experience a robot in these different ways, perhaps at the same time, perhaps not. I think this is an interesting issue and problem to further study.
Yeah, and I think that's actually, you know, part of the human experience is that we sometimes feel there's two different ways of thinking. You know, we have certain instinctual responses that we know are wrong at a more meta cognitive level, and so we have this internal war with ourselves frequently. So yeah, I think robots play upon that as well in that phenomenological critique. I do want to move on slightly to something else, which is the bigger argument in your paper, which is that about modernity and modernization, that the critique of robots feeds into a broader critique of modernization. So maybe you could just outline what you mean by that. What is modernization? Why is it a bad thing? And why does the use of robots exacerbate or express this problem further?
Mm-hmm. Yes, so modernization means many things, but one of the meanings is that it tries to organize things in a more efficient way, that is going to manage things better by means of calculation, by means of cutting up processes in smaller parts, by professionalization, by having formal methods, by regulating what's happening from top down rather than bottom up. And so several authors in the history of philosophy and sociology have criticized this, among them Marx, Weber, Heidegger, but many others have pointed out that this leads, of course, to more efficiency, leads to, for example, as having more products available, having faster services and so on, but that there are inevitably darker sides to this modernization, that there is an objectification of people, that people are treated as things, that we get alienated from our environment and from each other, from the products we make. And in the end, that we turn our society in a kind of machine where human beings become part of that machine, parts of this machine, rather than, humans. And so the worry is, in this modernization criticism, that that human values get lost. My personal take on this is that I think that on the one hand, this is really too pessimistic and wrongly conceived, because human beings and technologies kind of belong to one another. We have evolved together with our technologies. Technologies, I think, are constitutive of what we are as humans. So I think technology itself is not a problem. But on the other hand, in modernity, there are these processes and they have certain dangers and risks related to them. And I do think that objectification and alienation are among these risks. And so that it's important to try to develop technologies and use them in a way that avoids those effects and that lead to a society that is, that avoids these problems.
Yes, the modernity or modernization critique is totalizing, it's looking at society as a whole. So, I mean, the way I was thinking about it is that probably the classic illustration of this is something like the assembly line model of production, where the individual workers on the assembly line are reduced to effectively cogs in a corporate machine producing widgets or cars or products of some kind. And that has that alienating effect. Now, you could argue that inserting robots into that process, it removes humans from it. So it means that they're no longer the cogs in the wheel. That role is taken over by mechanized agents. But there are other ways in which the use of automating technologies affects us in our personal lives. And this is something that you talk about more in your second paper that I wanted to discuss, The Tragedy of the Master, Automation, Vulnerability, and Distance. So maybe you could just briefly talk about the ideas in that paper. So the first thing is the you use the Hegelian master-slave dialectic to set this up. So maybe you could just briefly say what that is and how it applies to our relationship with automating technologies.
Yes, I can do that. So basically, Hegel describes in the Phenomenology of the Spirit that you have two beings that struggle for recognition. And now there's a lot to say about that. And like the other topics, it's a huge topic within philosophy. But what interests me in this master-slave dialectic are two things. One is that the master becomes kind of dependent on the slave for recognition, which Hegel thinks the slave can't give because slave doesn't have independent consciousness. But in any case, the master is dependent on that slave. And second, because the slave takes on this labor task, has a different relation to nature, has actually a more direct relation through work. And again, the master seems to lack that. So if we think about that in relation to technology, then I think there are two kinds of applications one can make to our relation to technology. One is that some people think that technology becomes our master. So this relates to this big discussion about singularity, about technology taking over. Now, I don't find that a very interesting kind of application. It's clear that there is a kind of danger there, but it's not going to happen anytime soon. And I think we can, in response, try to keep control of the technology. But a more interesting problem, I think, is that it's not so much that technology becomes the master, but that if technology really is a slave, and we want it to be a slave, and robot means originally something like slave, laborer, worker, then what does it mean for us as masters? Because so even if we keep control and are the masters, then I think we make ourselves dependent on the slave, in this case, technology. And this is kind of tragic in a way, because we wanted control. It's the result of our will and action that we use these technologies, but it turns to its opposite, so to speak. And the second element, the relation to nature, that's also interesting because it looks like if we let robots do the work, that's great because it's very convenient. It means that we don't get dirty hands, but then it also means at the same time that the robots seem to have a more direct relation to the natural environment, are more engaged in a way with that environment. And so if we sit back as masters, we don't only become very dependent on the robots, but the robots also have this less mediated relation and this more direct relation to nature. And so I try to see this also as this shadow side, in a way, of our use of machines, that there are these effects on us as a kind of tragic masters.
Yeah, so, I mean, there are ways in which this happens even when we don't have what we might call robots or embodied agents. I mean, we have an increasingly mediated relationship with reality anyway through various ICTs. So, when you go out at night, you might see people in a pub or a nightclub, and they're all taking selfies and pictures of each other and uploading them. They're not really engaging in the experience itself. They're rather creating a series of digital representations of it that they will live through. And the same when people go to concerts and they spend most of their time videoing it or taking pictures of it rather than experiencing it. So, I mean, this is an illustration of that mediated existence, this disconnection from what's actually going on. When it comes to the use of automating technologies, then that applies to the activities that we do. We get something else to do those activities on our behalf, as the slave master classically did in the Hegelian dialectic, that idea. I just want to know, like, why is that such a bad thing? Why is that so terrible for humanity?
Yeah, I mean, I think the mediation by itself is not a terrible thing. It's as you say, it's quite ubiquitous, the way we experience things, the way we do things. It's also part of what we are, so it changes us, but that's not necessarily a problem. The problem is if it means that we become so much removed from the natural environment, there will be other meanings emerging, I think. So why is it so problematic? Normally, meaning emerges from our engagement with our environment. And if that relation to the environment is less direct, then the question is if the meanings we develop, if they are still responsive enough to reality. And if we want a particular kind of dependencies and vulnerabilities that come from that particular mediation and that particular use of technology. So I don't think that it's necessarily bad, but we need to make sure that because of the distance between us and the natural environment and the distance between us and other human beings, that we don't create a situation where the degree of alienation and mediation is no longer conducive to meanings that we think are human.
Yeah, so I mean, central to different accounts of meaning and life or certain kinds of experiences, but for you it seems to require a tight connection between the human agent and the natural world. I'm just wondering, how important that connection is. If we live out our lives in virtual reality, is that a tragedy? Because will our lives be less meaningful as a result because we don't have a direct relationship with the real natural world anymore?
I think as long as there is still some relationship, then that's fine, and it's still a kind of real experience that we have. But if there's no relationship whatsoever, and it's totally kind of self-contained virtual world, then I think we will develop into very different beings. And it's difficult to see what kind of beings, but it's important, I think, to think about whether that's what we want.
What you're talking about here is that there's a certain set of values, humanistic values, associated with humans as they are constituted now. Mm-hmm. If we live in a virtual world, we'll become very different beings, post-humans, let's say, to use the term that people often use, and that will result in the creation of a new set of post-human values, which are radically different or quite different from what we currently have. And so it's difficult to even really evaluate or judge that option because it will be so different from what we have.
Yes, but of course we can try to now already see in what kind of direction technological development is going, and we can see how our values are already changing because of technologies. Think about privacy, for example. A lot of people seem to care less about privacy than the generations before them. So if that's happening, if that's true, then well, we can think about is this kind of direction we want to go. So in the end, I think this kind of discussion forces us to reconsider our ethics, to talk about ethics in a sense of the good life. So it's not only a matter, I think, of saying like, you know, certain things are forbidden. Don't use the atomic bomb, for example, right? So this kind of negative constraints. It's also thinking about positive values and about our lives, like what kind of human beings do we want to become and what kind of lives do we want to lead? And that's something that as a philosopher, it's important, I think, that society as a whole answers this question. It's not something that you can only deal with by conceptual means.
Yeah, just this master-slave critique, the two things that have come up so far in the conversation are the dependency on the technology and the vulnerability that comes associated with that, and the alienation, the way in which the technology alienates us from the natural world. The other thing that you say in your paper is that, I think I'm getting this right anyway, that we are ourselves being automated by the technologies. I mean, how do you see that happening?
Yeah, so when we use a technology like a smartphone, for example, it's not only that the algorithm does things for us as a kind of slave, if you like. It's also that the technology makes us do things in certain ways. For example, using a search engine is a particular way of dealing with a problem. It's not neutral. It's a particular way to approach a certain issue, like, okay, let's Google it. This is only one way of dealing with it. And so it's shaping how we act. It's shaping also, in the end, I think, how we think. Yeah. So because it makes us do things in a certain way, there's a danger that we become these robots that do things in a certain order, that do things as a kind of in an algorithmic way. And so that excludes other ways of thinking and other ways of doing things. So we should make sure that we don't just adapt to the technology and adapt our thinking to the technology, but that we keep these other forms of thinking, partly mediated by other technologies such as writing, but also by kind of ways of direct engagement with nature, so that we keep room for other experiences and other practices that are not mediated by the technology and they do not make us into these machines.
Yeah, so I just want to end with one last question. So, I mean, a lot of what we've said so far has been critical of technology, and I know you have, and you've mentioned this previously, a slightly more nuanced view. So one of the things that you point out in your paper on the master-slave problem is that our relationships with technology aren't really binary, that there are positive aspects to our relationship with technology. So maybe we could end on that more positive note. Like, so what do you see as being the benefits and these non-binary possibilities when it comes to our relationships with technology in the future?
Mm-hmm. Yes, apart from obvious advantages of technologies, like giving us certain goods and services, it's for sure technologies and new media can be used to give us new kinds of experiences, new ways of experiencing our body, new ways of moving, new ways of communicating with people. And so I think by making us think about ourselves and by offering different possibilities, technology can contribute to a project of finding better ways of relating to one another, finding kind of better society. So I think in the end it is important to see the shadow sides, but also to keep a kind of openness to possibilities that might arise through the technologies, through the new technologies.
Okay, so thank you for joining me for this conversation, Mark.
Pleasure.